This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hey, before we get into today's episode, just a quick reminder that if you have someone that is currently pregnant and thinking about all the things that are ahead of them, from postpartum planning to breastfeeding and returning to paid work, to how on earth to navigate the childcare system and what they need to do now, we have just the guides for them. You can shop our Ready or Not go-to guides, Postpartum and Return to Work Planning, Breastfeeding and Returning to Work, and Childcare 101 for $69 as a bundle or $29 individually. They're packed full of information created with experts, and I personally think they're brilliant. You can shop them now in our show notes or readyornot.au. And I know times are tough, so here's a discount. Use Ready10 to get 10% off at the checkout. As a youngest child with three older brothers, I've always been fascinated by sisters and the way I witnessed sisterhood play out among friends and family as a kid. And I think that's why I found today's guests and co-founders of the Big Sister Experience so interesting. As they're about to tell you, while they're best friends, business partners, perhaps even soulmates in some ways, Bianca and Kritz Shazer could not be more different. Bianca longed for and dreamed of motherhood her entire life, and while I wouldn't go as far as to describe Kritz as apathetic towards motherhood, it certainly didn't consume her thoughts in the same way. And so as you can imagine, this led to tensions when Bianca took her first parental leave. The training wheels were on as the two were thrown into the deep end of figuring out how to manage their booming business, while Bianca was finding her feet as a first-time mum. And with both sisters feeling lonely and challenged in their own unique way, it led to their first and only big fight in 5 years of business, and they're here to tell us all about it. But not only are the two navigating motherhood and business together, they're offering a transformative journey for girls and gender diverse students dedicated to inspiring the next generation. No small feat. So not only was I deeply interested to hear about their journey of navigating motherhood and sisterhood in business, I also wanted to learn about the youth today. What gives them hope? What are the common themes? And what's challenging them? I learned so much about children and how I want to mother my own, and I know that you will too. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here are total opposites yet twin flames, Bianca and Kritz Shazer. Bianca and Kritz, you spend a lot of time with schoolgirls and gender diverse people. And I'm in that interesting bracket where I have nieces or younger cousins that are more the baby or kid age. And then I know 30 something plus. But I don't really know that middle group of the youth of today. So if you were to paint a picture for me, how would you do that?
That's a big question.
Yeah, just starting off with the big ones.
Yeah, we're into it. So I think if I were to look at the young girls and young people that we work with today, there's a lot of lonely young people out there. I think as a generation, they are so connected in their devices and social media and just in so many ways that we were when we were teens. But if we really speak to them and we really connect with them, they're just so lonely. And they're afraid to be themselves because of fear of judgment or feeling like they have to keep up with the trends. And I think that loneliness and that fear to be themselves has created almost teenagers that just don't really know who they are and are afraid to actually be themselves if they do know. So that's how I would kind of summarize it, working with young people at the moment.
That's really interesting because in a lot of ways, society is becoming more accepting of different types of people and people that you might say are in the outer. So do you think is it social media? Is it our online presence that's making people a bit scared to be themselves?
I think there's so many factors. Definitely if we're looking at girls and female identifying young people, social media plays a really big role in that because, you know, where a lot of the time they're online and they're on social media and they're comparing. So I would say that that plays a really big role in it.
I think another contributing factor is a lot of us as adults are quite stressed out, are quite under the pump. Many of us are dysregulated and not always aware of how to become regulated or what tips, tools, and strategies work for us. So we're working with young people who are part of these family units or in these homes where they're kind of having to be really mindful of navigating those relationships and who am I when I'm at home and who am I when I'm with my friends and where is it safe to experiment with who I am and how I want to show up in the world. So I think that uncertainty in the family unit and then playing out into schools plays a big part as well.
Oh, that's really interesting take. At the end, don't let me forget to ask you how we as parents then can better prepare ourselves for that. But before we get to that, let's take it back. Before the big sister experience exists and before your children exist, who are you two as career people?
Happy people, less stressed people.
Very well slept people. Yes.
Working less hours people. All of the above.
Oh, funny.
We were both teachers. So we both come from primary school backgrounds. So Bianca, she mainly taught grade 4, taught grade 6, but we kind of moved around. Yeah. And we're just living our best lives in apartments in Collingwood. Yeah. That's really where the business started, from our little benches in Collingwood.
Oh, wow. I lived in Collingwood too before I moved to Rye. So there you go.
Yes, best.
I definitely. Whereabouts were you? Is it safe to say now you don't live there anymore?
Yes, Mid Street. We were right in the heart of it.
Oh, I was on Keel Street, so not far away. How good. Those were the days.
Golden years.
Feel about motherhood then. Was it even a thought, or were you sort of just living your maiden career, creative lives?
We just couldn't be. I mean, we are the same person in two bodies 2 years apart, but we just could not be more different on that. I just spent my whole life, couldn't wait to be a mom, was counting down to meet that person to have babies with. So I was really looking forward to the day.
Yeah, and it just wasn't thought for me. I always knew that I would have kids. I knew that I did want them as part of my future, but it definitely wasn't a consuming thought. I wasn't in a rush to meet that person, to have that baby. There were even times where I was like, I might adopt. There's so many, you know, little people in the world that kind of need that love and that parent figure. So definitely for me, wasn't something that, yeah, was front of mind or something that I was rushing towards.
And I'd started basically the journey to freeze my eggs. I was that adamant that I didn't want to miss the boat and I wanted to be really proactive on that, and luckily met my partner around that time. But yeah, very different attitudes to motherhood and when that was going to happen for us.
And it's funny, I think society is really black and white with who we describe as a maternal person and who we don't. So I'm interested to know, would family members or friends have said then that Bianca was maternal and Crits wasn't, if you look back at that?
Interesting. If I reflect on it, a lot of the time people do say that Bianca's the more kind of empathetic, nurturing one, and I'm more a little bit direct and to the point. So probably with our personalities, a lot of people do see that, you know, there are a lot of similarities, but there are a lot of differences in that sense.
I would definitely agree with that. And I have to say that watching Crits as a new mother, she's got a newborn, little Rome's 10 weeks old, but watching her be a mother, she's such a natural and such a nurturing, yeah, instinctual mother that, yeah, it's just been magic to see, because I didn't see that journey in her longing or in her build up to that. So that's been really special.
That's exactly what I'm thinking, because I'm thinking about the people that, and maybe it's a bit of internalized misogyny, I don't know what it is, but the friends that I never really painted with the maternal brush. And then when they have kids, I'm like, oh, you couldn't be more maternal. You couldn't be a better mother. So that's why I was really interested to understand what people would have thought then and versus now. So Bianca, let's take it to you now, because your kids came first. You're pregnant. What are you doing for work at that time? And how does it go with pregnancy?
Yeah, so I fell pregnant during COVID. So it was a weird stage where the business, we had launched in 2019. We're now in 2020. Business is kind of stalling. We're getting phone calls left, right and center to cancel and postpone. We luckily had the foresight to create an online course for our young people, which during COVID, we were able to then begin wholesaling to schools. So kind of was really lackluster time for me. I was really looking forward to my whole life, like leading up to maternity leave and having this nice time. But I remember the date rolled around that I was officially taking leave, and it just felt no different really from the previous weeks of lockdown. I was really looking forward to having my baby and really looking forward to disconnecting from work. And I kind of had in my head that I wanted to take 12 months of leave, which is laughable now we think about it.
What was I thinking?
Yeah. So it was a strange time to be pregnant.
And so then you do meet your baby. What do you recall most from really early days of motherhood?
Oh gosh, just what time is it? What's happening? What are we eating? When did the baby last eat? What temperature is the heater set at? It just was the most bizarre kind of twilight zone. I also remember in the mornings getting up with my son and just putting music on and dancing around the apartment. And I get emotional just thinking about it, just such beautiful memories of me and Brax just dancing around the apartment to music. And that really being the highlight of my day during those kind of COVID lockdown times. But yeah, just a real like what's happening. It's just really a blur, not necessarily an unhappy or negative blur, just a strange kind of period. It's a
different space to be in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the return to work, I think, was a little bit different than you anticipated. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, well, I definitely came back earlier than expected. So I think with Braxton, I came back around 6 months.
No, nine.
Oh, 9 months. Okay, well, I remember it was much earlier than I wanted.
It might have felt really early because you wanted longer.
Perhaps, yeah. But basically the business was just growing. It was in a bit of a growth period. And I came back and, well, you had done all this work without me. So Crits had basically been navigating what was happening when I was on leave.
Well, I think we kind of come out the other end of the really kind of harsh lockdowns. And I think that a lot of young people and just society in general, especially in Victoria, was in a bit of crisis and people were scrambling to try and find things to support each other. So our business went boom because obviously well-being and focusing on mental health and educating young people around mental health and how to look after themselves and how to reach out for help. Yeah, the business went crazy. So if one positive thing came out of COVID for us, it was that mental health and well-being was actually a priority and always wanted it to be. So I was kind of navigating this new influx of bookings and interests. And I was literally the person that was like taking the calls, replying to the emails, presenting the workshops, and then like invoicing. And then I was also like following up and I was like on all the different emails, admin, crits, everyone, but it was all me.
You're like, let me pass this on to my manager.
Yeah. And it just like makes some sounds on the phone and then it would be me with a different voice in my nose or something. So it was definitely a hectic time. And it was just, I knew that Bianca had wanted to be a mum for literally her whole life. And I thought I need to, like, she has the right to take that time. So that was up to me to make the big decisions and the big calls. And if I reflect on it, it was a really lonely time because we went into business together and it just made me realize I don't actually want to do this by myself. But I was kind of in the stage where I'm like, okay, it has to be done. So kind of put systems, processes. I remember we did our first hire for somebody who could help me and it really just like went boom. So Bianca came back to a business that she didn't even know.
And so what did that give you in terms of emotions and feelings towards your output, Bianca? Was it imposter syndrome? Was it feeling like a fish out of water? Was there any resentment?
Resentment. I was resentful big time. So I came back and it wasn't at Crits. It was just the bitterness of wanting this baby my whole life. And how very dare this baby come along at the time my business is taking off. Like it just felt so unfair. And just, I mean, we had our first ever fight. We've been in business together 5 years, best friends, travel buddies, gym buddies, housemates before that. And we've had our biggest and probably only fight in business when I returned from that maternity leave. Emotions were running high.
Are you willing to tell me a bit more about that? You don't have to, but I just, I'm so fascinated by the sister dynamic. And I'm thinking of other people that are co-directors or co-founders that I've wanted to interview. And one thing I've really wanted to speak about is how did the other person actually feel when that person took parental leave? And I think it's hard for people to speak about unless you're sisters and so open and close like you. So I'd love to hear what you're willing to share.
Yes, everything. Let's do it.
Is this a therapy session now?
No, you say about the fight.
Well, so from my perspective, I've returned back from maternity leave way earlier than I wanted to. I'm navigating what daycare looks like for me and all of the cooties that comes with that. I'm now not only back at work, but on the court, as we call it. So I'm in schools facilitating workshops, which is a whole different layer of stress because my husband works night shift. And when he is at work, he's underground, unreachable, without Wi-Fi. So when the daycare called me, it was me that had to go. So that's hard when you're facilitating a workshop at schools. You can't, it's not just a desk job where you can pack up and go. So that was just a whole nother layer of anxiety. And I remember one evening I'm scrambling to get ready for the workshop the next day. And I've messaged Crits in the chat with our new employee. And I said, hey, I don't have this resource that I need. And Crits, obviously having carried the business on her own for 9 months, has just said, you need to be checking that stuff. You know, why don't you have it? And I've just got up off the couch. I'm pacing. How does this bitch know what I'm doing to get there? And, you know, how dare she? I've got a sick kid and I'm trying my best. And I think I'd said something not quite, you know, rated, but I said something in the chat like, look, I'm doing my best. Like I did check, this has slipped through the cracks. And I think at that time, Crits was struggling with a bit of back chat from our other employee and felt quite, you know, we always present a united front. So I guess I felt that she wasn't empathizing with how hard I was working to be able to show up to a workshop fully dressed and functional and with my brain not mush. So that's my side, Crits. What's your side?
Yeah. And I think it's just what I was saying, you know, like carrying a business that is expanding and growing and you're trying to kind of juggle all of these things. And then someone's like, oh, I don't have the resources. And it's like 9 p.m. the night before. And I'm like, oh my God, I've got to do this as well. So I think there was never resentment there. I think it added a step. Bianca and I always, when we talk, we're like sister hat on, business hat on, because it's really hard for the two not to coexist. So a lot of the time as a sister, I'm so empathetic. Her son is sick and she's a new mum and she's still got to go to a workshop. Like how shitty. And then as a, you know, a business owner, it's like, can you get your shit together? Because it's not my responsibility. And it's really hard in business as with a co-founder and then a co-founder who's also your sister to really navigate those challenges in a way that doesn't damage or undermine either relationship. So after that argument, we kind of just reconnected and we're like, how are you feeling? How are you feeling? And we both voiced, you know, Bianca was exactly what she said to you. And I said exactly what I've shared with you. And we're like, right, let's just navigate this together. Cause it was like really tricky time. And obviously me back then not being a mother to actually get it and her never have run the business without me to get it. Yeah. So we to keep communicating.
And did you feel like you could easily understand each other's side after you opened up about it? Or was it more just that you cared so much for each other that you thought you had to try and understand?
Yeah, I think that it's hard to explain though that first year of postpartum to someone who hasn't lived it. And I think that it's hard. We say this all the time too, like our business has been at a different stage of growth for my two babies and for Crits's baby. So it's hard to truly be in each other's shoes at that point of time. But I think it was more that we've always had the approach like it's you and I against the problem. So let's try and just give each other the benefit of the doubt and move beyond this to focus on a solution.
And if you look back, I should have asked you this before the previous two questions, but do you think tension sort of built because on Crits's end, you were probably so relieved that Bianca was about to return and Bianca on your end, you might have felt a bit of dread. And so you probably felt opposite emotions about coming back to the same thing?
Absolutely. I remember saying to my husband, I'm going to sell my share to this business. I just went out.
I'm never talking to her again.
It was just, yeah, it was dread. It was resentment and never at her, just the situation.
Yeah. And then from my perspective, it's just the utter guilt of knowing she's returning before she's ready. And because she has to, basically. So there was a lot of guilt. There was also an element of like, thank gosh, she's coming back and I don't have to make every call now. Even just the small thing of just working alongside someone, I think, you know, I really take my hat off to those people who are solo in business because it's a really lonely space. And, you know, you're making these big calls and you are working all of these hours. And when it's good, it's good. And when it's shit, it's all your fault. And I think there was an element of just that company that I was really looking forward to her coming back to as well.
Yeah, so that's such an interesting dynamic. Kritz, before we get to your experience so far with motherhood, Bianca, I'd love to hear about adding to your family, about if there's anything that you two did differently to set up that maternity leave and return to work, and also just what it was like to add to your family, because personally, I found going from one to two pretty wild.
No, great question. So we definitely, I think from all three of our maternity leaves, we've learnt lessons and reflected and going to do better next time. But I think definitely the second time around, what we did was Kritz's loneliness in terms of like decision fatigue and bearing the brunt of those heavy days, we knew that that wasn't sustainable the second time. So what we did was we sort of said, I would be open to having those conversations on the hard days and decisions, like let's talk them through together. So we definitely, I think the first time Kritz was so respectful of not talking any business with me at all. So the second time around, we did that differently. The second time around, I had to come back even earlier because we had a bit of a drama with a bit of a toxic staff member. So I think that time, instead of being resentful, I was just like, let's just get on with this. This is what the business needs. So my mindset shifted as well.
Do you think that's also because when you have your first baby, there's sort of a sense of slowness at the start because it's just you and that baby. But then once you have your second, there's a toddler as well. So everything feels a bit more chaotic and business-like anyway. Do you relate to that?
It's an absolute circus. I feel like my transition from zero to one was harder than one to two. For two, I was just like, I had more confidence in myself as a mom. I'm like, let's just get this show on the road. I had my strategies in terms of routine and that kind of thing. So I feel guilty saying this, but a lot of my second son's kind of 6 to 12 month period, it's a bit of a whirlwind. Like it was all just full noise in the business, like stepping up, needing to do what needs to be done. The parenting was kind of the easy thing compared to the growth that the business was going through, to be honest. So that was my experience the second time. And yeah.
What did care look like at that point?
So my in-laws are interstate. So, I mean, that's a whole nother podcast. The stress of finding daycare and with places and all of that was an absolute nightmare. I ended up having to drive 30 minutes away to find a center that could fit me in. So that was stressful. But basically my kids at that stage, I think were in daycare two days a week. And as of probably the start of this year, they've been 4 days a week because I've had to increase my hours. I do have my mum who helps kind of when we get stuck, but essentially it's my husband and I in daycare. And obviously Kritz, she lives a few doors down from me, so that's handy.
Oh, good. So you're still nearly housemates, which is nice. It seems like you need to be close at all times. Yeah. So Kritz, before you fall pregnant, what is the picture in your head of motherhood and business from watching your sister?
Yeah, so I think it was definitely a juggle and I think I could never know exactly how it was, but Bianca and I are quite close and we did spend a lot of time together that I'm just like, this is hectic, but I'm up for it. So I just think that we both, yeah, we had very different, you know, pictures of motherhood. Like I remember when Bianca was counting down the days to her maternity leave from the business and I was like, I'm working up until I go into labor, and I manifested that because that did happen.
What happened quickly? You've got to tell me. How quick are we talking after?
Yeah, so I finished on the Friday and I said, like, to the staff, I sent them a video. I'm like, I'm clocking off. I'm on maternity leave. Sending you all love. And I had him Saturday night. So it was like literally 19 hours of leave. So
you brought that on yourself.
Yeah, I brought that on myself.
And then what about the early days of motherhood? Your baby arrives. I was about to say, what do you recall most? But it's only 10 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's very soon. So I remember just we decided, you know, that we were ready to kind of start trying. And for us, the journey wasn't as straightforward for many people. You know, we have two angel babies. That was a tricky journey for us. And then when it was time, there was this real mix of emotions that it's something that I've wanted and waited for so long. And then the other side of it that's like, all of the doubt and the sadness and just, oh my gosh, am I going to be a good mom? And there was just so many different emotions there. And also it was a really busy time in the business that it was like the end of the pregnancy. I was like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. Like Bianca's like, sit down. Like, you know, when you're present, I'm like, no, I'm fine. And then like 5 minutes later, I'm like, my back is really sore. She's like, yeah, you're pregnant. So it was just like, oh yeah. So it was just really mixed feelings. And then obviously he arrived and yeah, it was just, it was a bit surreal. It was quite an interesting birth, if I want to put it that way. So I think that just the recovery from that, I wasn't expecting. I ended up having a cesarean. So the mobility and how you're like trying to be a new mum and then also trying to recover from this major surgery, I think is really not spoken about in society. I know a lot of women and a lot of friends personally that have had a C-section birth, and I just never knew. I'm like, this is major surgery. And then you're expected to just go and learn how to be a mum. And I was trying to breastfeed, and it was just like a really intense time. But he was, and he still is, a very easy baby. So he sleeps really well and everything's going really well. And I'm glad, because it was 3 weeks after he was born that we kind of, I had to come back to work. So that wasn't in the plan, but yeah, that's.
But I had a complete utter breakdown, so I was crying for help.
So why was it that you came back then, and talk us through what the last 7 weeks have been like?
So my plan, I've always planned to come back to work. So I planned to take 6 months, and I was going to be back at the start of like Jan, Feb with the school term. And I said to myself, I'm going to have at least 12 weeks disconnected from work, and then we'll have the touch points. But it was kind of like week 3, and every time I saw Bianca, she was just looking so stressed. So like sister hat on, there was the guilt, like, oh my God. And I think also just as a woman in business reflecting, I majorly, majorly undervalued and maybe underestimated how much I do in the business. And I think sometimes I'm like, yeah, because I do it and I've got my shit together. You kind of don't realize, oh my gosh, I was doing that and I was doing that and I do that. Because
can I just elaborate on that? Mm. So we have a team of 16, and Crits and I, obviously, you know, the co-directors of that, and we did not replace Crits for her leave. So we've got a full-time person going on leave, me working 30 hours a week. So in reflection, like, What were we thinking?
Did you have that discussion and just decide not to? Like, were jobs given off to other people, or was it just that you were so busy that you just didn't even plan for it?
So I think like Bianca and I had very different roles in the business. So she's more the HR kind of recruitment, hiring. And so when she went on leave, I was like, we just won't hire for now and we'll leave the staff reviews until she's back. And there was ways that we could kind of delegate her role. So I'm like, we can just do that for me. But then a lot of my kind of roles can't be put to, you know, if we're talking about pays and taxes, and I take the bookings and I also kind of coordinate the staff. Yeah, it was a bit ridiculous that we didn't replace me. And we learned that very quickly. And I think on reflection, I was just like, I don't know, maybe because I'm just a productive person, if I want to toot my own horn, that I just didn't realize how much I do. And that I get done in the week. So we quickly realized that.
A lot of people, when they come back from parental leave, can feel like they're no longer good at their job, or they're not going to be good at their job, or they lack confidence. Did that give you the opposite? Being like, hang on a second, I do quite a bit around here.
Yeah, because I said to Bianca, I feel like work for me is a really big part of my identity. And I felt really guilty for already planning my return when the baby wasn't even born, when so many people are like, why are you working up to, you know, this many weeks and why don't you take leave? And I'm like, because I don't want to. I want to keep working and I'm going to come back. And there was some judgment around that, and there was some guilt on me wanting to kind of keep working up until and then plan my return quite early. But I do think, yeah, it was just an interesting time that I thought my biggest fear was going on leave and then being like, Crits doesn't really do that much.
And Bianca's like, had the opposite.
Yeah. And Bianca's like, don't be ridiculous. And then I went on leave. I'm like, okay, nobody thinks that. And everyone's like, where's Crits?
I'm a queen. I am a queen. I'm very good at what I do, and I'm coming back to do it at 3 weeks postpartum. What does work actually look like for you right now? Are you just working while your baby sleeps, or what is it?
Yeah. So at 3 weeks, I mean, newborns just sleep round the clock, right? So I was like, I can definitely come back and yes, I can help. And at the moment we're kind of off the workshops and we're more just, I can work from home. So yes, at the start, it's just like when he's napping, I'm on. And I was just meant to work Mondays because my husband has Mondays off. So he was going to watch Rome and I was going to work. And that just has happened. It's just every single day, all the time. So yeah, it's just working when he's napping. And you know what? It's been an emotional roller coaster. It's been really consuming. You know, there's been times where I'm changing his nappy and I've got my pods in and I'm talking to someone about work and I'm like, I just feel like the shittest mom that I can't even like be present, you know, with my son who's 3, 4, 5 weeks old and I'm worried about work. So there's definitely, yeah, I've definitely felt like the shittest mom many times.
Had a lot of that. So I understand because my first return to work was a little bit more traditional. And this one's been a bit more freelance. I work for myself. And there's definitely moments where I've had the exact same, being like, what am I even doing? And yeah. The feeling it gives you is like so stressful. Like you may as well just have had a bad accident. That's how it feels. Like you're so anxious and you feel terrible. Are you sort of reworking it as you go then? Or is there sort of not much opportunity to put boundaries around it when you are one of the directors and there's so much to be done?
Yeah, it's a really tricky one. I mean, this is like really our first baby if we're talking about it. And it's like literally Bianca said the other day, we're trying to like raise our kids and raise the business. And I just keep telling myself like in 5 years, 10 years time, like we're going to be able to provide our children a life, you know, that is a special one from the business that we've built. So I would say that putting boundaries around it is proving difficult. But we're working towards them. So we're like, okay, we need somebody for this. We need somebody for that.
I think the tricky thing as well is our business is in a phase where we're literally recruiting at the moment. We're looking for 8 more team members because we need, like we just have that much demand. So it's not like a business that's fully set up with systems, processes and policies and procedures. It's the business is also in its infancy. So it's quite demanding and needy of us to make those big decisions and those strategic planning sessions. And so unfortunately, while we preach about setting boundaries and self-care, we're just in this phase where we just need a couple more years to get the business up and going with a solid leadership team and all the procedures in place. So it's really growing up at the same as our children. You know, it's just as needy as one of our own kids. And that's what's so conflicting because you feel like a shit mom because you're not present, but then you feel like a shit boss because you're not present at work either. So it's such a juggle, isn't it?
And delegating and hiring or getting new staff takes so much time. On a much smaller scale, we've tried to delegate and offload things off our plate, and that takes so much time in and of itself. So to get time back, you have to put so much time in, don't you?
Absolutely. We're in that phase.
Yeah.
Deep in the thick of it. So let's hear now about the Big Sister experience. Tell us all about what you do.
So we work with young people. We are on a mission to inspire the next generation through self-love and self-confidence. And we work with female identifying students from grade 5 up to year 12. And we basically run well-being, mental health and life education programs to really kind of inspire the next generation. So we work with students, parents and educators. So we take a really kind of holistic approach to how we can support the youth of today. So basically everything we wish we knew earlier, we've put into a program, and that's what we do in schools.
And let's talk about that parent piece now that we were talking about earlier. What is the education with parents to, I guess, help their kids feel loved, feel welcome, feel safe?
Yeah, I think the work that we do is more just opening up those channels because we're speaking with young people and they're like, we really do want to be able to ask our parents this, or we do really want to have conversations about that. And when we speak with parents, they're like, oh, I wish my young person confided in me about this. But there's that disconnect. So the work we do is all about, you know, opening up safe spaces to facilitate these conversations between families and really encouraging parents to be really authentic and vulnerable and just sit with their kids in the dark, because our young people don't always need us to provide a solution or to fix it. Often they just want to be heard and they want to be taken seriously. So it's really just reminding parents that you don't always have to do everything. Just showing up and listening and be present for your young person and providing that kind of space for them to approach you when they want to discuss something big and important.
And what are those topics or discussion points that kids and parents feel like they wish they could talk to each other about? What are the most common themes?
Yeah, I think definitely, I mean, there's a big piece around this gendered violence that we're experiencing as a nation, as a national crisis. I think that, so we have what we call an anonymous question box that we put out for the young people, and just so many questions around unwanted male attention, or they've found themselves in a compromising position, whether that's, you know, sending explicit things online or receiving unwanted sexual attention, and basically not knowing who or where or how to get help or to open these conversations. So I definitely think that that's one of them. I think as well, body image and just feeling so insecure, and, you know, the young girls open up about clothing and just not knowing how to dress in a way that makes them feel good about themselves and not knowing how to navigate these conversations with their parents. Anything else you'd add?
I just think as well, like mental health, anxiety is such a big one when we're speaking about teenage girls, but anxiety in society in general at the moment is really heightened. And there is most likely so many parents or guardians that have experienced those feelings themselves, that if we spoke about them a little bit more to our young people, it almost invites them to open up and know that, oh, okay, you've experienced that. Maybe you do know how I'm feeling, or it is okay for me to have these feelings. And I think that's a really healthy conversation to be like, you know, today I had this big meeting and I was feeling so anxious beforehand. And, you know, maybe that's last night why I was a bit kind of angry or raised my voice, or, and talking through that, relating back to the feeling is just such a gift that we can give our young people to allow them to kind of normalize what they're feeling and work through that as a family.
I'm just thinking to myself as you're saying that, perhaps reasons kids don't come to their parents for these sorts of things. If they're anxious, it might be because they're worried that it'll upset their parents. They might be safeguarding their parents' emotions, which is a huge burden for a young person to carry. Then I'm thinking about the gendered violence, that we have a history of female identifying people not being believed. And so maybe they're worried about that. And then I'm thinking maybe the third piece is they're worried about judgment. Say they have made a decision that they regret about putting something sexual online or whatever it is. Do you think they're the reasons why it is really hard to approach a parent that might be a bit more strict or a bit, I guess, colder to their kids?
Absolutely. I think all of those things are really valid. And I think also, I really believe that, you know, people in our age bracket, we've got the parenting podcast. We understand, you know, gentle parenting. We understand the study, the research behind developmentally what's happening. I think for the parents of the young people that we're working with in high schools, they didn't have that support and those resources. So they perhaps haven't nurtured the connections with their toddlers that we are trying our best to nurture. So by the time their students or their young people really need them, there's a bit of disconnect, and the students don't know how to outreach to the parents, and the parents have never been taught how to keep those channels open. So I think that we are really lucky in that regard as to the education, the conversations like these that we are all able to have access to if we choose.
Yeah, there's a lot more at our fingertips, isn't there? I feel like you've touched on what perhaps worries you about this generation. I think we've talked about loneliness and all of the feelings that can come with that. On the flip side, what gives you hope?
I think when I step into a room of young people, I'm always surprised by how much wisdom is in the room. And what I mean by that is, like, it's just sometimes the most simplest statements. Like, for example, we do an activity where we talk about who's ever put clothes on and felt uncomfortable and changed 10 times. And there was this student who was like, no, I just have only clothes in my wardrobe that I like and feel good in. And otherwise I just put them in a box in the other room. And I'm like, how simple.
What a great idea. Why have I never thought of that?
How brilliant. You know, like, it just really inspires me that just sometimes the concepts that they have are just so beautifully wise. And that really does give me hope.
Bianca, you work with female identifying people and you have two boys yourself. What does, I know your boys are quite young, so maybe it's more future focused, I'm not sure. How does the education piece that you're doing in your work differ from what you'll teach your boys? Does it at all?
Yeah, so it's definitely not too young. I definitely am already being really mindful of the ways I educate and empower my boys. I think for all sexes though, just being really aware of our emotions and just welcoming all emotions, recognizing that some are pleasant and some are unpleasant. And validating it's okay to feel angry, it's okay to feel sad, it's okay to cry. that's with the young people I work and with my sons. But in particular with my sons, I think what's different is I'm really teaching them about the concept of consent and having your no is important, and we're going to listen to your no, and it's important to listen to other people's no's. So there's something I'm really focusing on as well. Just, I always say, like, I'm raising young men that your young girls are going to feel safe around. I'm just, that is my mission with raising my sons, just to raise respectful, kind-hearted, emotionally intelligent young men.
I have a son and he's 2.5, and sometimes I'll coddle him and want to cuddle him and he says no. And I have to really remember to accept that. He doesn't want to be cuddled at the moment. It's his body. It's his choice. Do you think those tiny little nuanced thoughts that get lost along the way and that maybe sort of reduce body autonomy is that when they're really young, we sort of, I don't know, we think that their bodies are ours in a way? I don't know how to word that.
And I think even, you know, we were talking the other day about an example of tickling, like when I'm tickling my boys and they say stop, in our family, stop means stop and hands up in the air. So I'm teaching my sons to do that as well. And I think that these are really powerful little teachable moments that we can teach them to trust in their own voice, and that, okay, if I use my voice, it's possible for people to respect that and to listen to it. So I think that it's never too young to start. And we say in our family, it's like your body, your choice, unless it comes to health or hygiene or safety, then maybe mum will make the choice for now. But it, you know, their body, their choice, because there are, you know, you have to get in the bath tonight. There's things that we have to do at points in time when mum says so. But yeah, definitely having those conversations, it's never too early.
I'm also thinking about previous generations that perhaps haven't listened to kids the way they deserve to. Do you think that's a part of this conversation as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember us growing up being forced to walk around the table at a family function and literally kiss everyone hello and goodbye, even when we're, no, I don't want to. And you're like, you're just crying because you don't want to. I just think that is such a contributing factor to then, well, what I want, maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe people won't listen to when I say no or I don't want to.
And I think if we're thinking of girls, it comes into the people pleasing kind of, we start there. And
oh yeah,
I've noticed with my newborn, you know, I literally have to announce the room, like, please don't kiss him, because the older generation, they just don't get it. And, you know, it can be really hard. And I think obviously at my son's age, it's me advocating for him. But yeah, definitely the older generation, I think that there needs to be, there's not as much understanding there in regards to consent and what's best to listening to that little person.
Yeah. And so what does a big sister experience workshop or session look like?
Yeah, so we normally do full day workshops. So we've got workshop 1, 2, and 3, and the content really builds on that foundational content of workshop 1. So it's super interactive. We've got 2 big sisters who start the day being really real, authentic, and vulnerable, sharing their life story and what fuels their passion to work at an organization like ours. And from there, we really just set up the space via interactive activities to allow the young people to share if they feel like they want to share, and just hold space for each other. So it's not unusual for lots of emotion, for lots of crying, but also lots of beautiful moments of connection where the students can actually see each other and witness each other, hold space for one another and be like, wow, I didn't know you were going through that. I'm going through that too. Let's hug it out. And just the impacts of our workshop. We've just had some research done by La Trobe University, and the impact that our workshops are creating is just such a fuel for the work that we're doing, really. So yeah, it's pretty powerful stuff.
I have so many follow-up questions. I hope I can remember them all. My first is that when you are taking time away from your children, does any of that guilt get reduced by the fact that what you're working on is the next generation of healthy minds of young people?
I do think that that does make it easier. You know, I even said to me, I'm not coming back to a job that is just kind of a day to day. It's definitely a business and a job and a program that is changing lives and hopefully makes a better environment for our sons to kind of grow up in. So I do think we're in a hard work kind of space. We definitely do. And it does make it easier to know that we are helping people, and hopefully we're creating a better environment for our boys to enter into as well.
Yeah. And so you say that some of the people that work for you share their stories of what brought them here. What are some of those stories? Are you allowed to share? It's fine if you're not.
Yeah. So just some of our, all of our staff, kind of everybody in the world comes to where they are with a story behind them, right? And what makes them who they are. So, you know, Bianca shares her story about anxiety and depression, and I share mine about battling with an eating disorder. And we have people in the team that have been in, you know, abusive relationships or having eating disorders or being bullied in schools or trying to find their identity and then finding the LGBTQIA plus community. And so we have a really broad range of individuals that can give a voice to the young people that are sitting in our workshops to allow them to feel less alone if they're sitting there experiencing this. Because I think as a teenager, you just feel like you're going to be in high school forever and that these bad times and these hard times are just it and it's never going to end. And I think that always we bring facilitators on board that have a story to say, this was so shit and this was so hard. And I'm here now to tell you that, you know, you can work through it and it can be okay. And maybe it's a bit rocky, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. So that's really our intention there with them sharing their stories and who they are, who they are.
I might be generalizing here. I might just also be entirely wrong. Do the kids get less vulnerable and open the older that they get?
No, you would be quite surprised. So we thought that, but I feel like we start off in primary school and primary school is beautiful. Our team fights over who gets the primary school shifts because they just think you're the best and they're just, sometimes they share too much. We have to do a lot of protective interrupting in primary school. And then I feel like you kind of enter into the year 8, year 9 territory where they're like too cool. They come in with their pods. They're just body language is shut off. They just, you really have to work hard to gain that, you know, that trust and to create that safe container. But then I feel when we enter into year 10, 11, 12, all of a sudden they're like ready for these conversations, you know, the sexual health conversations and the party safe conversations, they're real life to them. They're really important. So they're really keen to engage in these conversations and they'll ask the questions. And there's a level of maturity often that, like I said before, and wisdom in the room that is, can be quite surprising and unexpected.
That actually, now that you say that, makes sense because that year 9, year 8 period does feel like that sticky period where you're maybe in a transition of who you were and you're starting to become who you are. And then maybe as you mature, your sense of self hopefully starts to mature or actualize as well. Wow, I'm quite obsessed with the work you do. I could talk to you for hours.
Thank you.
If I take it back to the motherhood piece, what have you learned about each other? So let's forget career or balancing work and motherhood. Let's just look at motherhood. What have you learned from each other?
I think that Bianca, she just has so much fun with her boys. And I think that like motherhood, well, the 10 and a half weeks that I've had of it, you know, it can feel, there's just so many highs and so many lows. Like it was the other night, 2 a.m., my son had woken up after a hectic day of work and I was just crying in bed because I'm like feeling sorry for myself. This is really hard. And I think that, yeah, Bianca showed me like to remember the fun and joy in parenting. And I think that, you know, often when you have those small moments, you know, she's got music on and they're dancing around, or even the other day, like they got downstairs and like, let's have a race to the car, like who's going to be first. And I think that just finding the joy in the small moments of motherhood, Bianca's really kind of shown me how like that should be there. And also she is a routine boss and I love it. I think that her boys really love it as well. You know, they know what to expect from bath time, bedtime. It's really good for her kids and it's also really good for her. So yeah, routine, structure, I'm going to be doing it.
And I think what I've learned from Chris is it's just, I'm always in awe of the full human spectrum, like of who Chris is in terms of, I've seen this real maternal, nurturing, soft side in her that I knew was in there, but I didn't expect it to come out as strongly as it has. And it's just been so beautiful to witness her interacting with her son and chatting away to Rome. And it's just been so beautiful to witness and also like boss bitch it up and step back into work and just get what needs to be done and be that rock for me. And then the next minute be crying with me like, shit, this is hard. Like I just so have always admired her ability to be so step up and do what needs to be done and allow herself to be real and vulnerable. And that has just been magnified with motherhood. And it's just been so beautiful to witness her as a mother And as a working mother, it's just been, yeah, it's been really, really amazing.
Motherhood is one of those things that it's sort of hard to say it out loud because it's hard to say this without making it out as though mothers are better women than people that don't have kids. So it's a really sticky point to make. But I'm interested to know, is there a new level of understanding between you since Kritz has become a mum? Like, do you think there's this other thing now?
Yeah, I think, like, as I said before, Bianca, like, I did help Bianca and I do help Bianca a lot with her boys. And obviously, we live down the road and it's like we were always there to support one another. But I think just being like having a baby and being a mother yourself, of course, there's that new level of understanding. And even, you know, there's been times where I'm like, okay, I'm back. And also, how shit that I'm back. So, you know, like, we can just really call it out, that understanding of me, you know, empathizing that Bianca had to come back early. And she's like, yeah, but it wasn't 3 weeks, you know, my baby wasn't 3 weeks old. And it's just that different understanding of like, okay, we're in the shit together. We understand how we're feeling. Let's just support each other, cry when we need to, laugh when we can.
I think for me, I definitely feel more understood by Kritz. And I think she's always been an incredible supportive person in terms of empathizing and supporting me with the kids. But you know, even a couple of days ago when she was crying, she's like, this is hard. And I felt like it wasn't about me, but I really felt seen. And I'm like, I see you. And we just had this moment and we're like, this is a lot. And I truly feel you. And I truly understand, you know, the juggle that is this morning. So yeah, I definitely feel a different, deeper level of understanding from her.
Mm. Oh, that makes me emotional. You're nearly giving me tears. For people that work with someone else, the dynamic you have is obviously very unique. But as you mentioned, as much as you're similar people, you're also very different people. How do you think in the workplace people best, I guess, manage different personalities and different ways of going about things?
Yeah. In our business, when anyone comes on board, we get them to let us know what their love language is, because I think that it's really important in the workplace as well to know how a person kind of feels appreciated and wants to receive that appreciation or that feedback. We also ask them, yeah, how do you like to deliver feedback? Do you want it in the moment? Do you want it afterwards? Do you want it the week later? Do you prefer it face to face? Or do you want me to voice message it so you can kind of listen to it again? So I think just understanding people's different personalities in the workplace and how they differ from yours is the most important thing to kind of understand when you're working together.
I think for me as well, in terms of Kritz and I and how we are leaders in the business, it took us a long time to find our own lanes and to really hone and focus in and be proud of our superpowers. So for me, my whole life, I was led to believe, oh, you're the weak one. You cry all the time. You're super emotional. And Kritz was always, oh, she's the tough one. She's the resilient one. She gets it done. And now I really lean into that. I'm like, yeah, I'm super emotional. I'm super compassionate. And that's why I've got a great corporate culture, because I can tap into my team and I can connect with them. And Kritz is brilliant at what she does because she gets shit done and she is the structures and the processes person. So I think in terms of us personally, it's really recognizing our strengths and yeah, honing them and being like, hey, Kritz, can you do this? Because I can do it. It'll take me 5 hours. It'll take you 5 minutes.
That's brilliant. This is one of my favorite conversations to date. I have one more question for you. If there's one thing that everyone listening could be doing with their children to lead to healthier minds, to feeling safe, feeling loved, feeling happy, what's the biggest tip that you'd give?
We are massive Brené Brown fans. And, you know, she's huge on vulnerability. And we really believe that vulnerability is the key to connection. And we say to parents, you can be vulnerable with your young people without sharing intimate details. Like, you probably don't need to be telling them your disagreements and if you're sleeping in separate beds or whatever. But there is that element of vulnerability that you can share, you know, with your child or your teenager to be like, oh, I had such a hard day and I'm feeling like I just want to watch a movie, or, you know, I'm feeling like I need to do this. And asking your young person for advice as well. As Bianca said, they have so much wisdom. They've got a lot of silly ideas, but there's a lot of wisdom in there as well that we can take. So I just think opening up and being vulnerable and showing your children that you are a human and you're a real person, you're not just mum. And yeah, that would be my kind of tip.
Can I be really cheeky and have two takeaways?
Please. Whenever I say one, people are always like, oh,
yeah,
one is very not strict.
I really feel like, you know, when people say it takes a village to raise a child, our mum has always said this to us. And I think the last couple of weeks, Crits and I have been living together with our families in my mum's house because she's been overseas. And I truly have felt what it means to raise your children in a village. And I know not everyone has the potential to maybe shack up and live in the same house, but I think that really letting myself ask for help and let Crits get one of the boys when they're crying, or going instinctually to pick up her son, like, that has felt so natural and so right. And I think that as a society, we've lost that. So I think find your village, find your people, find those humans that you can be vulnerable and real with. That would be number one. And number two, my husband is just hilarious. He's the most funny human. And I think that is a big reason for why we have so much fun and we have such a big focus on fun and laughter in our family. And even Crits and I, with the work that we do, one of our values is we have fun and laugh every day, and we do. And I think that it's so important to find those little micro moments in the day where you can just laugh. Even if you're laughing and you're like, this is fucked, let's laugh about it.
Yeah.
I think laughter and joy is really important.
It's a shame that your situation is unique, because I think back in the day that was the norm, whereas we have lost that art. You have reminded me though, Bianca, I have one more question. You have two kids, you have a business, and your husband works odd hours. And so you're often doing dinner, bath, bed solo, I believe, which might be part of the reason you're living together at the moment. Tell us about, as Crits told us before, you're very programmatic, you're very scheduled to keep things moving as they should. Give us your hot tips.
Yeah, I'm a routine boss and I've copped a lot of judgment for it, but it's what works for me and my boys really thrive on it. So some of my top tips. So my kids go to daycare Tuesday through to Friday. So on Sunday or Monday, I will literally pack four sets of daycare clothes. Like, I wrap it up in their jumper. I'm talking like nappy, socks, everything. So I've got the four bundles in the room. I just pull it out the night before. I also do meal prepping for the kids. And I know this is frowned upon, but we eat dinner in the bath because the kids love it.
I love that.
The kids are happy. I don't have to clean up.
So how does that actually work though? I need tips. I might do this, but how?
When I'm talking about meal prep for the kids, I had to really remove the guilt of, oh, we don't sit at the dinner table and have dinner together, and I don't have like meat and three veg. I do meal prep, like I'll do pastas or risottos, and I'm making sure they're getting their veggies and that, but just stuff that I can spoon feed them in the bath, sausages and things like that. So basically,
that is brilliant.
Yeah, daycare, we spend half an hour playing together where we can, and often I'm trying to be really present. I'm trying to not have the phone going, but then we hop in the bath and yeah, we call them pasta baths, even though they're not always pasta. Yeah, I just feed the kids in the bath. They love it. They're super clean. I don't have any mess. So that is
amazing. I've been at one. It's fun.
You were in the bath?
No, I wasn't eating the pasta.
I was the feeder.
Shit, this is pretty good. Bianca, I actually want to know one more thing from you then. Your kids are in bed. You've had a big day. Are you not getting back on the laptop to work after that point?
No, I rarely do. I have a strong boundary around that. So, I mean, if something is desperate, I've done it, but it's not something I do frequently. And this is part of why we do the pasta bars, because the kids go to bed at 7. And by 7:30, I've had my meal often in peace without anyone around me, reading my book or watching some trash TV. I'm in bed by 8 and that's it for me. Like, I'm tapping out. So I try not
to. Heaven. We go to bed at a similar time around here. So I'm right with you there. Thank you so much for sharing your incredible work and your incredible sisterhood relationship. It's beautiful. Where can people find your business online?
So our website is bigsisterexp, like experience.com. And our Instagram is at bigsisterexperience. So you can find us there.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.